we're playing the New Zealand rock band The Found on Take It From Us as our theme tune for our mental health radio program. They're a trio of Kiwi musicians, two of whom are mental health consumers. Let's listen to some more of their track, Long Gone. Welcome to Take It From Us, brought to you by Framework and the Like Minds Like Mind campaign. I'm your host, Sheldon Brown, and Take It From Us is the voice of mental health on Planet FM and addresses reducing stigma and discrimination against people with lived experience of mental distress. Our guest today on Take It From Us asked me what the main objectives of Take It From Us are, and I said, well, it's to build awareness of mental health, and it's also to promote hope and recovery, and clearly to address stigma and discrimination. So today on Take It From Us, we hear about a journey from pain to progress, a story which has taken our guest full circle. Despite the pain, the abuse, depression, some manic episodes and eventual diagnosis of bipolar disorder, our guest describes herself as, quote, truly lucky and blessed. How could that be when our guest had 33 moves in 10 years and all before the age of 19? The last move was to New Zealand from Holland, where she led a life of confusion, insecurity and foster homes. Here's Saskia Hawke to tell her story and what makes her life lucky today. Welcome, Saskia, to Take It From Us.
Thank you, Sheldon. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here, and I think that it's very courageous of you to come on radio, and I know that this is your first time on radio, so well done for getting here to the studio.
Yeah, thank you.
So how does that summary that I just read out to introduce you, you know, what's your response to that?
Yeah, when you see it all, when you hear it all in one paragraph, it sounds really quite horrific. But it spans over 19 years. And yeah, it was really confusing, especially the 10 years from the age of 10 to 19. Yeah. But there's nothing you can do about it. It's just stuff that happens.
So how much would you like to tell our listeners about what was happening between the ages of 10 and 19?
Okay, because my mom had bipolar disorder. I realize now. She left my sister and me with her parents straight after birth. And we had a really good childhood from the age of 10. So, yeah, I'm quite happy to share that.
It's always very confusing, though, when our mum is mentally unwell and perhaps it's not explained to us as children as to what's happening. Was that the situation for you?
It definitely was a situation. And I don't feel that they knew how unwell she was or what was happening to her.
So about what time, because, I mean, things in mental health have changed dramatically now, haven't
Definitely.
They? You know, my own mum was very unwell in the 1950s, and, you know, I suppose I was growing up maybe about the same age as you, and she would have these episodes. We'd have to take her to hospital. We had 100 steps down on our property on a hill in Christchurch, and it was sometimes quite horrific to get her to go to hospital. So none of that was really explained to me as to what this was. Was that your circumstance too?
No, not really. We luckily missed out on that because we lived with our grandparents. So Mum would just turn up and then be there. And quite often she traveled all over the world. So she would turn up with these awesome presents from like all these different exotic countries and stay for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then disappear again.
Mm-hmm. Without any explanation?
Without any explanation.
So yeah. What impact did that have on you? It must have been very unsettling.
Looking back, huge. Yeah. Huge. Yeah, you never knew when she would turn up, and you never knew that she would, when she would leave. So you didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to go to school because I was worried that if I went to school, when I came home, that she wouldn't be there anymore.
Yeah, I know that exact feeling because on those Fridays when my mother used to have to go to hospital for what I understand now was shock treatment, you know, I just never knew if I got back from school in the afternoon whether she would be there. Yeah. And also when she would actually return. It might be 2 weeks, it might be 3 weeks. And if it was that long, then that meant I would be visiting her in hospital. Yeah. And Sunnyside Hospital in Christchurch wasn't such a brilliant place to go in those days.
The only memory I have from hospital is going to, I'm not even sure where it was, because it's in Holland, and it was called Delta Hospital, and visiting her there, and it was scary. Mm. I've got very little memory of that.
Right. So life was good with your grandparents, but what happened to sort of turn that a little bit upside down?
Because my grandma was 40 when she had my mum, she was like in her 60s when she had us toddlers. Yeah. So by the age of 70, she became sick. So when I was 10, we went to family, friends. Then I lived with my mum and my stepdad for a couple of months or a couple of weeks even, went to children's home, went to foster parents, and then that's when the ball starts rolling. I went from here to there, to there, to there.
And that amounted to 33 moves in 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of moves, a lot of what would suggest to me to be very unsettling times.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. So what brought you to New Zealand?
I met a man, one night going nightclubbing when I was 18, and he had lived here in New Zealand and he wanted to come back. And I can remember saying to one of my friends, if this relationship becomes serious, I might end up in this place called New Zealand. And we looked it up on the map and it was like this tiny spot on the map. It's like, oh yeah, it's on the other side of the world. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
But Holland's not such a big place on the map. It's just that it's part of a few other bigger places, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So am I understanding it correctly that you pretty much just jumped on a plane thinking that this man would be there to welcome you?
Yeah, because he had left in October because his re-entry permit had run out or was running out. So he left and I wrote him and he called me on the phone. And then I literally jumped on a plane, first time I'd ever flown in, jumped on the plane hoping that he would be here.
Yeah.
And also, like, my English was very limited.
Right.
So, yeah, just didn't even think about it. It didn't occur to me until a girl I met on the plane asked me, you know, are you sure this man is going to be there? And I said, oh, yeah, of course. No, we're going to get married. And he said, oh, you know, how sure are you? It's like, oh.
I remember getting off a plane from Singapore and Sydney expecting somebody to be there to meet me, and there was a no-show. But you did actually get met, I think.
Yes, yeah, he was there.
Right.
Yeah.
So that must have, how did you feel about?
Oh, very happy. Yeah.
Quite relieved.
Yes.
Yeah. Very relieved. And how old were you at this time?
I was 19.
Right. Yeah. So it was a big adventure. Never been out of Holland before?
Yeah, we had. Right. I had lived in Austria for about 6 months, and I had been in Germany, and like being in Holland, like Belgium is just across the border. Mm. So like, but compared with New Zealand, it's like going to Austria would be the same as going to Wellington.
Right.
Like, because the distance you're looking at is so small.
Yeah. Mm. So what can you tell us about the start of your new life then here?
When I first came here, everything was excellent. And because the problems that I had in Holland with the depression, they went here. They went with me. I definitely thought I had left them behind. But after about a year or two, the depression started again. And I became suicidal and went into the hospital system. And I think the biggest problem at that time is, first of all, not understanding things properly. Also, the language barrier, because that, looking back, that was a huge, huge difference as well.
So, I mean, surprisingly, you describe two visits to Kingsseed Hospital as very positive. Mm. You must be one of the few people that went to Kingsseed and had a positive experience.
I always think, like, I always listen to other people and I think, it surprises me. Because not having any family here, going to Kingsseed was like a big holiday. But not only that, Kingsseed in the 80s was a nice hospital. The grounds were really beautiful. You had classes, you had the swimming pool, you had the tuck shop, there was things to do. Mm. You learned things, there was education. So you walked away with more knowledge and rested. Like the nurses were compassionate, far more compassionate than what it was in the 90s.
Mm. Yeah. So the 90s was your third visit to Kingsseed, I think. And how had things changed then?
93, I went in there, end of 93, and it was horrific. Looking back, I think I just wanted to get away from the place at the time. It was scaring. People were just drugged up to their eyeballs and walked around like zombies. And there was a lot of people arguing. The grounds were really run down. The swimming pool was there, but it was really run down. The library had closed. The shop had closed. People sold drugs on the premises. It was weird.
No longer a holiday camp.
It was a weird, weird place.
Well, let's take our first music break. And I think that Fred has got some detail here about some tracks that Saskia has selected. And we've got a track from King Kapisi, which is called Scream from the Old Plantation.
Fight, fight, bail. Come with us down all the way. You must. first in the vision, cultivated by the Samoan. Strong is my brethren, Samoa, more Samoa. Island brothers extend the vibe through the X, but the only X Samoans knows is XXL. Over sequels, oversized, overstay is overstressed. Last names, pack it up, can you pronounce it? Delete the era that began with ages. Visual effects guaranteed by the flick of the brown member now. Brown cover Polynesians been exploited. Cena Oi. Come into my life, I got coconuts to show you. Screams on the old plantation, I'll stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. Screams on the old plantation, I'll stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. Screams on the old plantation, I'll stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. It's just my savage instincts coming back from the brink. Revitalizing all this that we lost. Culture ever be your lost in the ignorance. From the ma to the pa to the child. Wonder why your child is running around real wild. Pass on the knowledge so the tongue leaves its cradle. Or take them back home to the motherland and teach the ways of our elders. Lifestyles in the speech. Yeah, yeah, lifestyles in the speech. Come on, come on. Gotta
make way, select the run. Bad feet, no one me rugged dancehall echoes.
Ba-ba-ba, boom, boom, ba-ba-ba, boom, boom.
Midnight reflects, raise la di da da ooh.
Screams from the old plantation, non-stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. Screams from the old plantation, non-stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. Screams from the old plantation, non-stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. It's a demand of a homo. I'm just a psycho, ready to blow up the mic from intro to outro. Paul and his trying to understand his doubtful. You're trying to take me out, yeah, if it's a pedophile. I'm from somebody, village is from a mile. When it comes to battling, I'm just an animal. Big amnesia, second migration. We all pay homage to the old plantation. We just pay homage to the old plantation. You got to
pick way, select the run. Bad feel, want me rugged dancehall echoes.
Ba-ba-ba, boom, boom, ba-ba-ba, boom, boom.
Midnight reflects, raise la di da da ooh.
Screams from the old plantation, non-stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. Screams from the old plantation, non-stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear. Screams from the old plantation, non-stop. Fight, fight, bear, fight, fight, bear.
Well, that's King Kapisi with Screams from the Old Plantation, which was selected by our guest on Take It From Us today, Saskia Hawke. And I must thank all our listeners who filled in the online survey in terms of Take It From Us. We've had some fabulous results from that, and I'm still analysing those. But thank you very much for the positive information that and feedback that came back for Take It From Us. We're also, I should say, missing James King, who's been helping co-host the show. I was to pick James up from Toiora today, but perhaps he's just got sidetracked on something else. So Saskia is telling her story about coming to New Zealand, I guess the adventure of leaving Holland at the age of 19 and coming out to a place right on the other side of the world, which she described as being pretty small on the map. And her experiences here, two or three visits to and stays at Kingsead Hospital. So, Saskia, it sounds as though you had sort of confronted your depression, the post-traumatic stress that you had experienced. But why was a diagnosis of bipolar such a shock to you?
I'm not sure. I was diagnosed with bipolar in the mid-80s, and I was given lithium to stop the bipolar, to stop the mood swings. And I had a really, really bad reaction to the lithium. And the doctor at the time said, eat properly, sleep properly, take vitamins, and you probably will be fine. And that's exactly what happened. And I had no problems. Like, yeah, there was mood swings, but no major manics. Yes, I used to get depressed, but not majorly. And I didn't want to be bipolar. Bipolar was, I don't know, I could not accept being bipolar. It was not me.
It was a scary label?
It was a scary label. I was quite happy to suffer from depression. Later on, I was quite happy to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder because, yeah, that's definitely there. But bipolar? Mm-mm. Nope.
But at times, you know, depression can be pretty frightening and very painful. It got that way for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've been suicidal more than anybody would want to know. Yeah.
And right.
Quite pleased to say that I'm very bad at trying to commit suicide. That's why I'm still here. Very happy about that.
It's been a real pleasure meeting you, and I'm very glad that you are still here. So, when did you see the chance for a sort of a totally different direction in your life?
I started studying towards becoming a counselor in 2007 at MIT, and within a couple of months, I decided that social work would be more for me. And that was a real eye-opener, like learning more about all the different disorders and all the different problems that are around. So education, learning. And the more research I did, the more understanding I got, the more I started to understand about myself. Still not wanting to accept that this was happening to me. Yeah. I started my degree in social work in 2008, after we'd been in Holland for Christmas, what was awesome. And 2008, I sailed through very happily.
Sailed through?
Yep, got through it quite nicely, like little ups and downs, and I totally crashed 2009 in July. I went on started to get manic, and I just, flew away.
Really?
Yeah.
Went on a spending spree with the plastic.
Yeah.
How did hubby take to that?
I stole my husband's credit card and went on a shopping spree. He just was so amazed because although he, right from the beginning, I had told him I was bipolar because he never really had seen the signs that much, and because like we never had looked into it that much. When it happened, he sort of went, oh, okay.
Was that a little bit of an understatement to his reaction?
Yes. Well, actually, even till today, he's my rock. He's my anchor. And he just took it in his stride. Like, by the time he had to return, like, he returned items back to the shops, I was in respite care. And he just never blamed me for it. Mm. And that was the greatest thing. He just never got angry with me.
Well, that's a wonderful response to something that I guess could have made your husband very angry, very frustrated, that sort of thing. So, I mean, this really sort of came out of the blue, I guess, did it? There wasn't a lot of warning that suddenly you'd got sort of manic and...
Yeah. Mm. Looking back, I can see how it built up, and it actually built up over about 2 years. And in hindsight, you could see the signs. Yeah. But at the time, it was just like... I can remember being in respite and being there for about 2 or 3 days and sitting at the psychiatrist's office. And I thought, I'm going home now. And sitting there. And he kept saying, no, but... And I'm thinking, why is he saying no? What does he want me to do? And he's like, oh, are you going to take these tablets? I'm saying, no, I don't want to take tablets. I don't want to take medication. Because at the time I was still very, very much against taking medication. I had never been on medication and I didn't want to start being on medication. The times that I had taken antidepressants were not a good experience to me. So, yeah, in the end I just got really confused and became really angry, and he called the police, and the police took me out of respite. In handcuffs. And I can remember sitting in the police car with handcuffs, going to the hospital, thinking, what just happened?
Yeah.
Like, it really did not make sense to me. Yeah.
So how much have you learnt from those sorts of experiences? Like, it sounds as though you now understand the build-up to this manic episode. So what do you do now if you have those little hints that something may be going wrong?
The first thing that happened when I was in hospital, when I finally came down enough, was that I went on mood stabilizers. And, I said to myself, no, in hospital, one of the patients said to me, if you want to get out of this place, take the tablets, and once you go home, you can stop them. But take them for now. And I thought, okay, I want to go home, so let's start taking them. And so I started taking them. And then everything just got clearer. It became easier. So I still thought, once I get home, I'm going to stop taking them. But once I came home, I thought, this is not so bad. So I kept taking them. It's like,
So this was new medication that you hadn't tried before, and it was it sounds as though it was beneficial.
Yes, it was. It's Eplan. It's mood stabilizer. I was on Cyclomatis antipsychotic, and that just made me sleep. So I came off that, and I thought I need to be off this because if I'm on this, I won't be able to study ever again. Mm. So I came off that very, very slowly with the help of psychiatrist. But Eplan, I stayed on that.
Yeah.
And now I look back and I think, why didn't I do this before? Why didn't I discover this before?
Well, sometimes we feel it's the responsibility of our psychiatrist or the person prescribing the medication, don't we, to come up with the right formula, dare I say magic formula. It sounds as though it might have been a bit of a magic formula for you.
It was a magic. Well, to me, it definitely feels like it's a magic formula. It was a magic formula. But to me, the biggest step has been, first of all, wanting to take medication, because I was so against medication. The medication itself frightened me so much. And having the understanding of what the medication does to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that understanding has helped me an awful lot. And I'm really fortunate, because the people, my psychiatrist and my key worker, really take the time to explain things to me. And, I use the internet to research a lot.
Yeah, well, I think they're all very positive things to do when medication is a factor in our mental health. Well, let's take another music break, and this time we've got Rivers of Dreams by Billy Joel.
Of the night, I go walking in my sleep through the valley of fear. searching for something, taking out of my soul. Walk anymore. Oh, I must take the rest of my life until I find what it is I've been looking for. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep through the jungle of doubt to the river so deep. I know I'm searching for something, something so undefined. It can only be seen by the eyes of the blind. In the middle of the night. Ooh, 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 ooh. Not sure about life after this. God knows I've never been a spiritual man. That is running through the promised land. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep through the desert of the truth to the river so deep. We all end in the ocean, we all start in the streams. We're all carried along by the river of dreams. In the middle of the night,
Well, that was Billy Joel with Rivers of Dreams, and I'm your host on Take It From Us, Sheldon Brown, and we've got our guest Saskia Hawke here. We've also got a number of community notices as we build up to Mental Health Awareness Week, which starts on Monday the 4th of October, which is less than a week ago and runs through until Sunday the 10th. There are a number of associated activities outside of that official Mental Health Awareness Week as well, which I want to tell you about. But during the week, the Auckland Disability Law and Human Rights Commission are inviting people to a launch of the Human Rights Commission's new resource, Making Complaints, a Guide for Mental Health Service Users. And that's going to be, the launch, in fact, is going to be on the 7th of October from 10 to 12 at the Deaf Aotearoa New Zealand Community Room. You can RSVP to Eileen Burton on email eileenb@hrc.co.nz or ring her on 306 2655 for actual details as to where that's going to be. On the 13th of October, we have been promoting the biggest awards celebration for our mental health and addiction sector in Counties Manukau. The event is packed with pioneering and innovative mental health and addictions projects. And some of those are going to include a pilot for placing mental health and addictions nurses in police stations. And another is called the Yaya Group, that's Y-E-Y-A Group, services working together to provide a strengths-based recovery approach for young adults. Now, that Celebrate Innovation and Excellence event is at the Papatoa Town Hall. It's the 13th of October. It's going to kick off at 11 o'clock and finish around 4. There's going to be some food on the way through. And so a good reason to be there is to learn about the latest innovations and initiatives that are happening in our local mental health and addiction sector in Counties Manukau. There's a family and whānau day, which is going to be on the 21st of October between 11 and 2. This is going to be at the Otahuhu Town Hall, which is 10 to 16 High Street in Otahuhu. And if you need more information about mental health and don't know where to turn to, then you'll get all the answers at this whānau family day on the 21st of October. That's a Thursday. And on the 8th of October, there's going to be a sector quiz night at the Harlequin Bar in Great North Road, Point Chev. Entry is $10 per person, and you can enter teams of up to 8 people. This is being run by Richmond, New Zealand, up here, their Northern Division, and Framework, who I work for. To enter a team, you can speak to Tua on 847-9156 or email Tua Wilson, all one word, at Richmond. So that's the sector quiz night, and that's going to be in support of Mental Health Awareness Week on the 1st of October, which is just a little outside of the actual Mental Health Awareness Week. There is a gig at the, not the King's Arms, no, it's at the Thirsty Dog in K Road. That kicks off about 8 o'clock. So get along to the October gig on the 1st, a Friday night from 8 o'clock until late. And supporting families, SF Auckland, supporting families in mental illness are going to have an open day, which will capitalise on the theme of Mental Health Awareness Week. That theme is flourishing for everybody. And you can get along to SF Auckland's central office in 423 Great North Road, Grey Lynn, Thursday the 7th of October. Drop in any time between 11 and 3. They're going to have flax weaving, Tai Chi, a massage, and essential oils and silver jewellery making. So that was a little bit of an interest of mine, silver jewellery making. So I might get along on the 7th of October to see what they're going to be promoting and instructing and helping us with in terms of silver jewellery making. So today on Take It From Us, we're talking to Saskia Hawke. And Saskia, you were telling us about the start of your study in 2008. It sounds as though that was sort of interrupted a little bit by this little manic episode. So when did you get back to your study, education?
I was really fortunate because I only had to take one semester off or 6 months off. So I started again beginning of this year. And I started really slowly with just 2 classes. I was really fortunate to get the scholarship, Floris de Groot scholarship through Framework. And with that money, I did another paper called Working with Domestic Violence, and this is going to help me towards my social work degree as well.
Great, yeah. No, well, that scholarship is something that has existed for quite some time. It's promoted by Framework. It's the Floris, I don't know whether I can pronounce it quite the way you do, Floris de Groot scholarship, and this has been a fabulous help to a number of people with lived experience of mental illness. And Saskia was one of the recipients of this, and I believe it has made a big difference to your ongoing study.
It definitely has, not only to my ongoing study, but when I received the scholarship, seeing the other people out there who had mental illnesses who received scholarship, all of a sudden it's like, oh, these people are just like me. They don't look any different. They don't act any different. And, yeah, there's a scholarship out there. It was really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was your background in study? I mean, you'd had 33 moves in 10 years at a time when you were probably trying to get some education. Is this been your first major opportunity to educate?
No, it hasn't. Looking back at my high school years, like, it was absolutely non-existing because, as you say, so many moves. I had quite a few tries at doing high school education. When I came to New Zealand, I, of course, started working. And then in 93, I decided to go back to school. After I came out of hospital, I thought, okay, what do I really want to do? My son was 3 by that time, and I decided that he had gone to live with his father, and I said, we had broken up by then, he had gone to live with his father, and I thought, okay, let's go back to school, and let's do something I always wanted to do, what was being an electrician.
Really?
Yeah.
A sparky.
And, yeah. And I did the first year, and I did really well, and one of my teachers said, I did really well at electronics, and one of my teachers said, why don't you keep going in electronics? And yeah, so I did.
And the result of that, in fact, was a Bachelor of Technology degree in computer engineering.
Yeah.
When did you finish that?
In 2004.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think you're very, very proud of.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I did that as an adult with two children. By then, I had married my husband. And yeah, I got my oldest son back. And had my younger one in 98. My younger 98. So studied part-time and worked part-time and the kids.
Right.
So, my husband is such good support.
Yeah, well, that's fabulous. So you gained this Bachelor of Technology degree in computer engineering, but what was it that encouraged you to do more study? And was your mental health experience a sort of a platform for doing something in social work?
I've always said I want to do something with the knowledge that I've gained through my life. I've always said, like, this has happened to me for a reason, and I must be able to help other people with my experience. But I kind of put that aside because I wanted to prove myself academically. I don't know if it was for myself or to others, but that's why I've got my engineering degree. I also was really involved in mentoring, and I really, really enjoyed that. And I enjoy being with people. I enjoy, you know, helping people to keep studying. So, yeah, it was kind of a progressive step from there to go into social work.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about progressive steps, because my next question was about your baby steps. And I think that, how important are baby steps on the path to well-being and progress?
Ginormously.
Baby steps, which are ginormously important.
Oh, yeah. Like, I used to run. Now it's one little step at a time, one moment at a time. My biggest part in that has been forgiving myself for my mistakes. And especially when I started coming down from my manic, because your brain is racing all the time, everything slowed down. To me, it still at times everything seems to go really, really slow, and I think, I don't know, but it's a good thing.
It's more fun when everything's going fast, is it? But that's not going to last.
What goes up has to come down, and yeah, maybe when you're flying high as a kite on fresh air, because that's what it is. When the chemicals in the brain go out of whack, you literally flying high as a kite on fresh air. A can of Coke and a cigarette used to make me fly high.
Really?
Yeah.
So no Coke and no cigarettes now?
Well, I actually stopped smoking when I was in hospital last year, because hospital became smoke-free. So I wasn't allowed outside. And I haven't come back to smoking. So, yeah, that was quite a nice side effect of it.
I think you're the first person I've met that has been in hospital and not sort of been encouraged to smoke more. But I guess if the smoke-free policy is working, then it worked for you.
Well, had no choice.
Right. The trouble is you still see people standing outside the gates.
Wasn't allowed outside.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I was stuck inside. You get to a point that you're so unwell that you're not allowed outside. Mm. So you were given patches or chewing gum or any of the cigarette replacements.
So what would you say to our listeners about smoking? I mean, how did you feel once you came off the smokes?
looking back, I wish I had never started, but also the effect of cigarettes on the bipolar, it's actually, now I understand what it did to the chemicals of nicotine did to the brain. It actually speeds the brain up even more. So it's, yeah, it's all entwined together.
Yeah.
Like, especially any of the chemicals reaction in the brain just makes the brain, yeah.
Mm. Well, let's come back and talk a little bit more about your sort of wellness recovery plan and that sort of thing. But we've got another track, and this time it's called You're My Inspiration by Chicago. And there's a special significance to Saskia about this track because this was your wedding dance.
Yes, it was.
This is Take It From Us, and your host, Sheldon Brown. And again, I want to thank all our listeners who filled in the online survey. It's an amazing and cool tool at SurveyMonkey. All the results come back. They seem to be all processed and in pie charts and graphs and that sort of thing. So thank you for your feedback and comments. It's been quite humbling, actually. And today we're talking to Saskia Saskia Hawke about her story of courage and personal growth and that sort of thing. What other things have contributed to your, what you describe, I think, as your extreme personal growth, Saskia?
Well, mainly being around other people who have mental illness and understanding a lot more about them, like being with Framework. And when I first came out of hospital, I started playing sports with Framework and was going 10-pin bowling. It was just like really good being around other people and being around people that didn't care. They would quite happily talk about it and didn't care that you were really slow because you were like on drugs. Learning, like just education, like my biggest thing is forgiving myself. I think I said that before. And realizing, admitting to myself that I had bipolar, that was the biggest step. Mm. Like, because once I could admit it to myself, I could then get help. I was then, like, other people were then able to help me.
Sounds like that was sort of a weight off your shoulders, and, you know, and also a lot of us maybe are in a state of denial about things, and I don't think that's a helpful place to be.
No, the denial is not at all helpful because people can't help. You can't grow. You're stuck until you admit that there's something not right with you, not quite right. That, yeah, I freely admit I am different, and I'm proud that I am different.
Well, that's the theme of, the Like Minds, Like Mine program in many ways, that we promote difference. And, the difference is about creativity, and it's about accepting that difference. And I guess not being judgmental about that.
Yep, definitely. And yeah. I think, especially being around people playing sports at Framework, with people, they are people that are non-judgmental. And that will give information, and that has helped a lot.
Well, certainly Framework has a very strong emphasis in its personal focus program towards fitness and well-being, and we run a every Thursday at Youth Town, basketball and warm-up, fitness, circuit training, touch rugby, and it's all part of the build-up to the Touch tournament, which is coming up in November. We've still yet to just confirm the actual date of that, but that's going to be probably in the third week of November, so look out for that. We'll be telling you more about that. And one of the great things is to see people come to life and really feel enthusiastic about getting out there and throwing the rugby ball around or throwing the basketball around and doing it as part of a community. And it sounds as though you had great benefit from that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, definitely. Just being out of the house and being in a place that was safe,
right,
like, or with people that I felt safe with.
Yeah.
But also doing the rap course, that has helped me a lot.
Okay, so rap, what is rap?
Wellness Recovery Action Plan.
Yeah. And you did that with a group called Recovery Innovations.
Yes,
and
I did.
It sounds as though you're really enthusiastic about that rap plan.
I am, because it's given me a booklet with different strategies to coping strategies that if I get stressed out, that I can look at. And also, through it, you write a plan of different stages of wellness. Like, if you're slightly unwell, these are the different things
strategies. Yeah,
it's one of those words that
plans.
Always gets stuck.
You can use plans. Yeah.
Okay, and different stages of wellness. If you get really unwell and have to go into hospital, it's one of the things you take into hospital with you, and a doctor can say, "Okay, this is what she would want or she would want when they get unwell." Because quite often, when you get unwell, you can't express yourself in the way you want. You can't advocate for yourself. So this is a way of advocating for yourself. And when you come out of your manic or come out of your depression, what has happened is what you want instead of Well,
so you've got a record of those things that have worked in the past, yep. You know they work, and yep. If you apply those and you're responsible about them, and then they're likely to work again.
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a wellness recovery action plan shortened up to RAP in our mental health circles. And, you know, that's not one that I've done, but I've certainly heard a very good RAP on the RAP program. And so I'd certainly encourage anybody to make inquiries. I know that Framework does a little bit of RAP training, and you know, I'm sure that if you rang Framework on 378-0028, we could certainly point you in the right direction for RAP training. So, Saskia, congratulations. You've done very, very well for somebody that was a little nervous at the start of the at the show. And I think it's been very courageous. And it epitomizes the way that you're leading your life now, that that you're taking these steps and taking these risks.
Yeah, thank you. I think it is all about taking risk, but safe risk, not...
Safe risk.
Yeah, definitely.
Not going out and capitalizing on the plastic.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not. Well, it's been a real pleasure, Saskia, having you on Take It From Us, and this has been our show. And next week we will be celebrating Mental Health Awareness Week and celebrating the whole concept of flourishing, which is the theme of Mental Health Awareness Week. So till next Tuesday, this is Take It From Us.